This is Speaking of Faith First Person. This online exclusive is part of Repossessing Virtue, an ongoing series in which we search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Kate Moos, managing producer of Speaking of Faith. Here I speak with Robert Millett. He's an LDS scholar and professor of ancient scripture at Brigham Young University. Robert Millett, in what ways do you consider this a moral or a spiritual crisis of your own or of our cultures?
Well, I think the fact that we tend to reward what we regard, if you will, in our culture, that is, we tend to pay big for what we think highly of, is often very revealing. The fact that athletes and entertainers and CEOs make so very much money, while our elementary and secondary school teachers struggle to get by. I mean, I know so many wonderful young men, for example, who would make fabulous elementary school teachers because they love children. They just can't afford it. Or knowing if they go into it, they'll work their second and third job in order to get by. I think about that a great deal. I think I can still remember an interview, it's been several years ago, with a professional basketball player who was doing a strike, and he was being asked, I think he was making $12 million a year, and again, obviously this has been a long time ago, and they turned to him and said, how can you justify going on strike when you make that kind of money? And the look in his face was one of sheer innocence, as it were, and he said, I'm just trying to feed my family. And I remember thinking, my, your family eats well. And I think it is but indicative of a deeper spiritual problem in terms of we need a major values clarification of the things that matter most in this life. And I think we're rewarding the things we really care for, and that's a bit revealing.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And so how do we begin to achieve that, what you call values clarification, if we've been throwing all of our resources and money and hard-earned income at basketball stars and CEOs who, as it turns out, at least in some cases, are highly, deeply corrupt?
Yeah.
How do we begin that process of clarification and discernment?
Let me talk about what is impossible to do, but I would do it if I could.
Okay.
Then I'll do that quickly.
I'll give you that.
I'll do that quickly. I'm not a socialist, I promise. And yet if I were, I think I would almost regulate pay. I'm a professor at a university, and I make good money, but I don't make a lot of money. But I chose that because I love what I do. But I know that there comes a point when enough is enough. How much does a person need? Mm. Does a person need 30,000 square feet for a home, in a home? Does a person? I mean, you start saying, is this necessary? And so when I say that. So on the one hand, what I would do if I had the power is, if I had my way, I would regulate salaries, and that sounds horrible to some Americans, I know. And I bleed blue, red, white, and blue. But I've become very concerned about what's happened in our economy.
Hmm.
I really think there's a need almost for and this doesn't sound possible either, but I really believe there's a need for a kind of national revival, a Billy Graham type revival, except that would be cross culture, cross religions, cross whatever, in which we talk to one another and focus on the things that really matter most.
Mm.
What things matter most? How can we sleep at night while there are so many people who not only have no place to sleep but are starving to death?
Mm.
I think it would be one thing. I guess I could live with myself better if we just don't have the money to take care of them.
Mm.
But we do.
Mm.
We have the money to take care of them. I'll give you an illustration just from my own faith, the LDS faith.
Mm-hmm.
We each month as a church, we have what is called a fast Sunday. And on that Sunday, usually the first Sunday of the month, Latter-day Saints fast from two meals or a 24-hour period. And then they fast for a purpose, for a reason. Maybe it's praying that God will help them with a wandering child, or help them with a financial crisis, or help them whatever with this or that, or bless some friend of theirs who has problems or health difficulties. But whatever it is, but during that period of time, during that period of fasting, we also take of the money that we would have spent, and we generally encourage to be not frugal, but to be as giving as we can, and that goes into what is called a fast offering fund.
Mm.
That fund is used either locally at the local congregation, if there are those who have special needs, or it is sent to Salt Lake City and is used all over the world.
Mm.
Now, that's just one little thing where, I'm more overweight than I should be.
Mm.
So, practically speaking, it doesn't hurt me one bit to fast. In fact, it's spiritually and physically rewarding for me. But more importantly, there's a sweet feeling associated with knowing that that money is going directly to help someone who just lost their home, or someone who just lost a job.
Yes.
And so I think the whole concept of trying to get a nation or a world to realize it's going to be perhaps little things like that, whether it's a fast offering or something to call our attention to the fact that we do have the money here.
Mm.
Forgive me for really sounding like a religious fanatic, but when I walk through a casino and I realize the billions of dollars that are going into that, I find myself shaking my head and saying, "Oh my goodness, surely that money could be used for a better cause."
Mm.
And go ahead.
And well, I guess I'm returning to the question we started with a little bit. You are describing symptoms of something here, which we, I think, are trying to articulate. The use of excessive wealth. I mean, excessive being a very subjective term, but let's say people who make over $10 million a year, that the failure to recognize the other in the equation of personal gain, in a world of limited resources, do we call this greed? Do we call it spiritual poverty? Spiritual bankruptcy is a term I'm familiar with.
It could be greed, but you know what else it could be? I thought about this a lot. I thought that kind of it's as if the God of capitalism has replaced the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's as if the American dream has resulted in a horrible nightmare for millions of Americans. And here's the point I think I would respond to your question with. I think so often, particularly for religious people, we've come to equate success with righteousness or God's acceptance of us.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, uh-huh.
So that if I really prosper financially and I'm a religious person, it must be an indication that I'm living a life that's pleasing to God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that just doesn't fit for a lot of awfully good people that live in third world countries who've devoted themselves to God in whatever way they know how. And so I really, when I speak of a kind of revival, a kind of values clarification, I'm talking about being able to realize that we have reached the point where we no longer can distinguish between wants and needs.
Mm.
You know, we've just got to get us blank. And the fact is, no, we don't.
Mm.
No, we don't. I remember so well when my wife and I were first married how, I mean, I'm so grateful for this. I don't know. It must have been my mom and dad who went through the Depression, and therefore we had a nice life in my home. We weren't wealthy, but we had what we needed. But I remember my wife and I, when it came time to buy our first washer and dryer, the idea of charging it just wasn't an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We saved until we had the money,
mm-hmm.
and then we went and we bought it. And I remember the man, when I handed him cash, he said, "You're going to pay cash for this?"
Wow.
And I said, "Yes."
Hmm.
He said, "Sir, this is a credit world." Now, this is 1972. He said, "Sir, this is a credit world." I said, "Well, is my cash acceptable or not?"
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have brought it upon ourselves in the sense of, yes, it's a national crisis. Yes, there are things we can do in the United States. Yes, there are things that the government can undertake to do. But we're not going to really solve this on a national level. It's a very personal, a very community. Let me give you one illustration. Mm-hmm. What difference does it make when I go out and buy something really extravagant? This may sound like real fanaticism, but I think there's something to this. What difference does it make to my next-door neighbor if I go out and buy a $100,000 car? Now, it may make no difference, because you may say, Millet is an idiot, mm-hmm. and he just shouldn't do stupid things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what if his children say to him, Dad, look at that old clunker we have. Why don't we get something? How come we can't be more like the Millets? How come we can't get a nice car? And so Dad feels this pressure to keep up with the Millets.
Mm.
Then I think I'm doing him, I'm rendering him a terrible disservice. And so I think you touched on it a moment ago. Decisions that I make, even about what I purchase, I think have an impact on those around me, and I ought to ask myself, am I helping those about me by being more and more and more extravagant?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer to that is no. I'm mm-hmm. hurting them.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think individuals and families, I think individuals and families deciding to set aside money, to set aside things that they could give to those, to give to a charitable organization or to individuals each month. I mean, we have some dear friends who every other Christmas, their Christmas gift is they leave here, they travel down to Mexico, and they spend 2 weeks, 3 weeks in that area where they go just serving people there. And
mm-hmm.
that's their Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that spirit of service, that spirit of sacrifice, we're almost on the verge of losing that.
Yeah.
That spirit of thinking of other people before we think of ourselves. I know those children. I've taught them at the university. I know what kind of individuals they are. They're people of character. They're the kind of people I would love for my grandchildren to marry, you know, because they have their hearts in the right place. But it all started because a wise mother and father said, why are we doing this anyway? And they began celebrating their Christmas by getting out among the people and sharing. And I think individuals, I think families could begin setting aside money just for the care of others. And I think we could do, and not to be noticed, not to have my name on a plaque,
mm-hmm.
but to do it anonymously so that you know, no one knows but me and God.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, and for the record, but you are sounding only a little bit like a socialist and not at all like a religious zealot. Just if you need that assurance.
Okay.
What are you doing now, Robert, that is different? Are you having conversations that are different? Do you have places you think about this, share this communally, pray over it? Are you making different decisions in your life?
It's a very good question. The answer to the question is I'm very different now. I'll tell you how it affects me. It affects me that I can't walk down the street and have a person say, "Sir, do you have any change?" It just drives me crazy that I can't just say no. I have to help them. It's a sense of personal obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's happened within me is I don't worry. Oh, he's just going to go drink it up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's between him and himself and God. That's,
yep.
that's their problem.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is, if I have it, should I give? So one of the things that has happened to me over the last several years is I find myself asking more and more, what are the things I can do every day? And I've got to say, I'm a sucker on the sidewalk.
Mm.
And should I be that way? Should I not give to a more reputable cause? Perhaps so. Secondly, I do find myself encouraging my children and my grandchildren now to be much more people conscious. That the greatest happiness and the greatest joy in this life is seeing happiness in people, other people. It's not acquisition; it's consecration that matters. and my ability to realize that what I own isn't mine anyway. It was given to me. It's a gift. Why not share it with those who don't have what I have? And if I should die one day, which I will, I want it said, well, he wasn't an old miser. He didn't leave a whole lot to his family, and I'm not worried about that.
Mm.
I would rather leave here feeling good about the care of the poor, that I did something. I think, if I could just wax political slightly, I'm a Republican, but I believe I have a concern. I think it's a valid concern that people have raised, that Democrats and others have raised, that sometimes the far right is so concerned with such things as homosexuality and abortion, we don't concern ourselves with other moral issues, which would include the environment and poverty.
Hmm.
And my goodness, if there's anything the Old Testament and the New Testament, as in the Judaic Christian tradition at least, and the Muslim tradition to some extent, that the Bible talked about, it was the care of the poor. And this was just a big thing to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
that people waxed eloquent in their ostentatious righteousness, but they didn't care for the poor.
Mm.
And so I just find myself more haunted. If nothing else, I'm beginning to be more haunted by the question. I'm more concerned now, not about what I see on the news. I find myself more concerned about people on a closer level, on a more personal level. My wife and I have tried to give more, to do more, to be more involved in things in the community. I believe the problem can be solved, but it won't be solved on a national level.
Mm.
I think it has to be solved on a personal, family, community level. In the sense that, again, we enjoy a major reversal, clarification of our values of what matters and what doesn't matter as much.
Robert, where do you look in reference to this crisis? And the word crisis is getting a little dog-eared. I mean, a crisis normally goes away after a while. This is going to be with us, I think, for some time. Where do you look for wisdom and leadership? You're an Old Testament scholar, or a scholar of ancient scripture in any case. And are you turning to new places for words of wisdom? Are you finding new leadership on this issue or more generally?
Well, interestingly enough, some of the wisest folks around the country in terms of people that are giving good counsel, interestingly enough, their counsel is couched in Holy Scripture. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
I go back and I read Micah, and you know, what does the Lord require of you? And I go back and I read the Old Testament, and I see the Jewish prophets just over and over again saying that the sheep are being devoured by the pastors, by the shepherds. I go back and I just read this constant concern that's so dear to the heart of Jesus, that we ought to concern ourselves with those of the poor. What I'm saying, I guess, is this: I haven't found any particular solutions in new voices. The solutions I tend to find are scriptural solutions that have been there all along and are just as timeless as they are timely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that we have to turn to new places. We can find the principles in holy scripture or the holy books, but what we then need to do is try to have the wisdom to apply them to individual situations.
Very good, Robert Millett. I think that will do very nicely. I so appreciate your taking the time to talk to us today.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Robert Millett. He is an LDS scholar and professor of ancient scripture at Brigham Young University. This is Repossessing Virtue, Speaking of Faith's continuing exploration of the economic crisis. For more, subscribe to the SOF podcast and visit speakingoffaith.org.